I'll start all over. All right, you got your Bibles? Let's look and find the word providence. Where are you going to find it? You'll be amazed. I know you believe in providence. You've lived. If you're a Christian, you're able to look back and look back at time. And even if you're a young person, you're able to look back at a time and I thought, I bet God was a part of making all that work out, because He has that way of making it all work out together, doesn't He? And so that's what I want us to talk about. But the word providence in the old King James is found one time. And the new King James is not found at all. And the one time it's found in the old King James is not even talking about the providence of God. Now the concept is there, and the word provide is there. You remember Abraham going up the mountainside, and Isaac says, where is the animal? Oh, you know, we've got the fire, we've got the wood. Where's the animal? How did God answer it? Remember what it said? God will provide. There it is. And oh, does God provide? And we've got to learn to believe in the providence of God. And we of all people need to learn to believe in the providence of God. Sometimes when we've talked about the cessation of miracles, we think, well, God used to really do a lot of things for a lot of folks. He's not doing that much anymore. You know, are you aware there are only 5 times in the Bible that there's an abundance of miracles? Only 5 times. You think it's in Genesis all the way through the book of Revelation. There are only 5 periods of time that you have God work. Obviously the creation, right? Obviously the creation. You can't get a world without the creation. And so you've got it. But what about when you get down into the land of Egypt? How about all those miracles? Think about the plagues that came and the Red Sea and the manna and the water out of the rock and all the rest. You know, you stop and look at it. Man, there's all kinds. There's all kinds of times like that. And then there's the time let me get my mind straight. And then there's the time of Elijah and Elisha. God is about ready to bring all of these prophets. And see if you can figure this out. Are you good at math? Elijah did 7 miracles in the Bible. And Elisha said, give me a double portion of your spirit. Double portion. Got that? Wonder how many miracles Elisha did. Elijah did 7, and Elisha said, give me a double. Are you good at math? How many miracles do you think Elisha did? 14 miracles. And so you've got all of those things there, and then you've got Daniel. You've got Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over there. You got Daniel in the lion's den. You got the interpretation of all of those dreams. And then you get to the New Testament, and you've got Jesus and the apostles, and you've got that period of time. But that doesn't. Did God miraculously save David whenever he killed the giant? No. Used natural laws, didn't he? David had that skill with that sling and everything, and God took care of him. Let me ask about this. God gave them manna in the wilderness. Did God feed you this morning? Did God feed you this morning? Is there any difference in the source of that homemade? I know your wife got up at 5 a.m. this morning and made you homemade biscuits. You know, I hope your wife can still whop those cans on the side of the kitchen cabinet, you know, to get those biscuits to pop out. Any difference in those biscuits? What about the water that you drink? God provides. And so when we begin talking about the providence of God, we've got to understand sort of the purpose of all of those miracles, creation, to get everything in place. But you've got to authenticate the old law. Moses could have gone up the 10 commandments. God could have handed him those 10 commandments, and he could have brought them right down, and they'd been the very commandments that Moses, you know what happened? You know what the people would not have understood? Where'd Moses get these? God said, I did it. And I'm going to show you, I'm going to shake this earth, I'm going to make this mountain get on fire, I'm going to get all of these astounding things happening, and I'm going to authenticate. I've just showed you in the land of Egypt, and for the next 40 years, by the way, our husbands, are you aware their shoes didn't wear out for 40 years in the wilderness? Your wife loves shoes. You have to have a new pair of shoes almost every time she goes out shopping. Can you imagine? Their clothes didn't wear out. Can you imagine one of those wives in the wilderness? I hadn't had a new outfit in 39 years. Well, you still look nice in what you've got. You know, I mean, God's taking, that's miraculous, you understand, in relationship. God's making some amazing things, but it had to authenticate the message. Elijah and Elisha, where's that come from? You got to authenticate these last 17 books of prophecy. I mean, you think Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, you skip Daniel and then go to Hosea and Joel and Amos and Obadiah and go all to those books. Where's the miracles? They're not there. God had authenticated that office whenever he gave Elijah and Elisha. And then here's Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're not in a Jewish land. They're over there in Babylon. How on earth are the Babylonians going to be able to understand who the messenger of God is? Who's the messenger of God at Mount Sinai? God said, it's Moses. Who's the messenger of God during the prophets? God says it's Elijah and Elisha and the prophets. Who's the messenger of God in Babylon? God shows it's Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And when you get the New Testament, isn't that the purpose of the miracles of Jesus? One night this week I'm going to talk about, have you ever sat on a jury? We're going to put Jesus on trial. I hope you'll be here for that lesson. It's a little bit different approach. But how do we know? How do you show Jesus is the Son of God? John says, many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples that are not written in this book, but these are written that you might believe, and believing have life through his name. John 20, 30, and 31. That's why these miracles are there. And so they went out, and the Lord, they went out in the Great Commission, the last verses of Mark chapter 16, verse 20 said they went out preaching, the Lord working with them, confirming the words with the signs that followed. That's what it's all about. But my, oh my, let me ask you, does God provide for bad folks? Is a good God, what if God only sent blessings on members of the Lord's church? Wouldn't that be amazing if he only did that? Suppose you became a part of the church, you know, within the last month, and you woke up the next day and there's a Mercedes Benz out in your front yard. And man, that's really something that a week later, there's a big old boat that's out there and you gotta have a pickup, and the next day you got a pickup. I mean, a real big, you know, 6-wheel pickup or 8-wheel pickup if you have those. And now you're ready to carry this boat and then there's an airplane and your neighbor says, what's going on in your life? Well, nothing changed. I did become a member of the church. You know what your neighbor's gonna say? Where's that church? You know this verse. God makes the sun to rise on who? Yeah. And he sends the rain on whom? Isn't that amazing? God provides for evil people. God provided for you. What about Joseph down there in the land of Egypt? God's got some of his chosen ones. They're up there in Israel. And there's a famine that is coming. Guess where Joseph is? Down in the land of Egypt. Is there any connection with the fact that Joseph is in the land of Egypt and there are his brothers, Jacob, and his children up there in the land of Egypt? Absolutely. Joseph said, God sent me before you down in the land of Egypt to preserve you alive. How did he do it? 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine, and it's the 7 years of famine that allowed God to take care of those brothers. What about the Egyptians? My, you're talking about peace and prosperity. Man, though it's 7 years, they had a bumper crop, and then when the whole world is starving to death, they've got this food stored up. Nobody else in the world's got it, man. These Egyptians, no. You got to understand, God's taking care of you, and he's helping you. But they have a whole lot to do with you. It has a whole lot more to do with Joseph and his father Jacob and the tribes of Israel that someday will be. But God provides for them. God provides for evil men. And if it were not that way, wow, what a weird world this would be. You'd have folks coming in to worship here at this building, not to praise God. Sit around and eat this bread and drink this cup and not even thinking about Jesus. I got a new Mercedes. Wonder what I'll get tomorrow. He's a spirit. And we worship him with that soul. In spirit. He's a spiritual being. And we worship him in spirit and truth. Talk some more about that, you know, in the next hour, about this spirit, about brute beasts or living souls. That's amazing, isn't it? God takes care of his people. Does he take care of his creation? Can you think of any manifestation of the fact of any place in the Bible that talks about God taking care of his creation? You know, there's a command of the Bible that sometimes we have overlooked. We know the verse, at least the statement of truth, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. We know the commandment, go into all the world. We know, do this in remembrance of me. But there is a verse in the Bible we may have overlooked, and it's in the Sermon on the Mount. You know what Jesus said? Look at the birds. That's a command, isn't it? Behold the fowls of the air. They neither sow, they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns. And yet, your Father feeds them. That's in the Sermon on the Mount. It's in Matthew chapter 6, the whole last part of verse 24 through 34. It's all there about God's providence, about, you know, take time to look at the birds. That is amazing. How many birds do you reckon there are in the world? You ever had a pet bird? Aren't they messy? Did you ever forget to feed them? ever run out of food or something? How would you like to be in charge of feeding every bird on this earth? I Googled to try to find out how many birds there are. You know, there are 7 billion people. And one came back from Google, said there are 400 billion birds. And another response was 800 billion birds. I don't know. Who's keeping count? You understand? I mean, who's the bird counters and everything? But I know there are a lot of them. Now, Jesus said over in Matthew chapter 10, you know, verse 25, he says, are not 2 sparrows sold for a farthing? That's the old King James. Farthing. What on earth is a farthing? Well, fortunately, Judy and I were in New Zealand for 10 years doing mission work there several years ago, and what a great experience that was back in the 60s. And, three of our 4 children were born there and everything. I'm giving you a little background of my life right now in case you want to know, because you're wondering some things about me. Shall I go ahead and answer your 2 questions right now? I'm 82. And yes, this is my hair. Okay, now we've got all that settled. Okay, I didn't want you to sit there and just, well, I don't know. If it's a toupee, you should have gotten a better one. You understand what I mean? You understand what I'm talking about? We were there. If I say 4 kids and 13 grandchildren and 17 and a half great-grandchildren, would that impress you? I don't know if it does you or not. I can't remember their names. I asked my granddaughter, start giving them anything you want to give them numbers. I can remember numbers better than I can remember names. But here, 800 billion birds. I don't know if there's that many. You know what Jesus says? They're sold for a farthing. 2 are sold for a farthing. Now, in British money, when we were in New Zealand, they had that big copper coin called a penny. Had another copper coin, not as big as a silver dollar, but almost as big as a silver dollar, called a halfpenny. They called it a halfpenny. Half of a halfpenny, half of a halfpenny, is a farthing. Now, 2 birds are sold for a farthing, so it means one half of one farthing, which is one half of a halfpenny, and a halfpenny, which is one half of a penny. Is that 1/16? You do the math. I'm not good at that, but I mean, what's a bird worth? You know what Jesus said? And there's not a single bird that falls to the earth without your Father. That's amazing. Look at the birds. We got some terrible economic things that are around us, and who knows what the future holds. Look at the birds. It's rather interesting to look at the Greek word for the word falls to this earth. You know what I thought of when it said falls to the earth? I thought a bird was flying on and takes a nosedive and hits head first. You know, like an airplane coming to the ground. And finally, I looked up the Greek. You know what it says? He alights. He lands. But let's say he lands on the earth. There's not a single bird that flies from one branch to another without your father. You flying on a lot of branches in your life. You're probably not in the place that you were born, not living in the house that you grew up in, maybe not working at the jobs. I mean, you are jumping all over the place, you know. Life has certainly changed. Look at the birds. Not a single bird flies to another place and alights without your father. Wait a minute. I was in India. I spent 2 months in India years ago, and that's where this sermon actually came from. People starving to death over there. In some of the larger cities, they did not have money to bury their dead. If you don't have money, you can't bury your loved ones. You can't buy a casket. You can't buy a burial plot. You can't pay a funeral home. You cannot even hire somebody to go buy some clothes if you don't have any money. And that's where they're. And so folks that die on the streets, they'd have like dumpsters, or not dumpsters, but dump trucks that drive up down the street and just throw the bodies of people who died in the street. I got to read Matthew chapter 6. Look at the birds. And it suddenly dawned on me, I saw hundreds of starving people in India, and I never saw one skinny bird. You've never seen a skinny bird. Isn't that amazing? Now Jesus says, aren't you better? If God so clothed the grass of the field, how beautiful, you have beautiful flowers. Solomon in all of his glory, Matthew 6, was not arrayed like one lily out of the field. Look at the lilies of the field. Solomon in all of his glory could not clothe himself like one lily of the field. Now, if God takes care of that grass of the field, which today is, and tomorrow is cast in the oven to be burned, won't he take care of you? Look at the birds. And look at the grass. You know, one of my favorite psalms, and I'm going to tell you where it is. If I do, you'll turn to that psalm, and you won't listen to a word that I'll say. You'll be reading the next verse. I'll tell you where it is in a minute. So if you want to know where this verse is, you need to wait just a minute. I want you to hear this. Not the birds. God sends the springs into the valleys. They flow among the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. Beside them, the birds of the heaven have their home, and they sing among the branches. He waters the hills from his upper chambers. The earth is satisfied with the fruit of his works. He causes the grass to grow for the cattle and vegetation to serve men, that he might, talk about man, us, talk about us, might bring forth food from the earth and wine that makes glad the heart of man, oil to make his face shine and bread that strengthens his heart. You guys are so blessed. We don't have any mountains in South Florida. We've been down West Palm Beach, you know. My car just doesn't, it just dies when it gets up here. And all, you know, it's all up and down, you know. Down there, it's flat level. I mean, you can stand and see West Texas all the way from Miami, Florida. You understand what I mean? Just level ground. but how blessed you are. It is as though, Wayne, David sat out there taking care of sheep. He started doing the very same thing Jesus was talking about. He saw all of these wild birds. You seen any deer lately? I know what they were eating. They were sitting there eating that luscious grass that was beside the road waiting for you to come down to jump out in front of your car. I know. But you understand? How many skinny deer have you seen? Now, I'm not saying you've never seen a skinny deer, but you've never seen a skinny bird. Isn't that amazing? And these mountain streams? And these trees? Are you aware? And I'm not an expert, and I know this is not a word, but you'll understand that. I'm not an expert in birdology, but I understand that birds build their nest out of certain material and build it in certain trees at a certain height, and you can tell them what kind of bird it is by the kind of nest. Where does it get all that straw? Where does it get all those sticks? God provides. Look at the birds. But it doesn't stop there. The trees of the Lord are full of sap, the cedars of Lebanon, which he planted, where the birds make their nest. The stork has her home in the fir trees. The high hills are for the wild goats, and the cliffs are a refuge for the rock badgers. He appoints the moon for seasons. The sun knows it's going down. He makes gladness, and it is night in which all the beasts of the forest chirp. Their young lions roar after their prey. Imagine being David taking care of a sheep, and you hear a lion roaring. You know what David says? The young lions roar after their prey and seek their food from God. The young lion roaring, asking God, provide food for me. Doesn't stop there. When the sun rises, they gather together, they lie down in the dens, and then man gets up, goes out to work and to his labor until evening. O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom you have made them all. The earth is full of your possessions. And then, and love living in South Florida when I read this, and you've been to the beaches. The great and wide sea, in which are innumerable teeming things, living things, great and small. Little tiny seashells that are crunched up. You know what I'm talking about? Sometimes you're digging down in and all of a sudden, and there's just a gazillion little shells. Living things. The great things and the little things, both small and great. And there are the ships also. And there is the Leviathan which you have made to play there. Some sea monster that God put in the sea. And they knew about it. And they'd seen this massive sea monster out in the sea. Think Loch Ness Monster, but think something totally different, you understand. And then he says, these all wait for you, that you may give them their food in their seasons. You open your hand and they are filled with good. And then he says, you send forth your spirit and they are created and you renew the face of the earth. Next time you go hiking and get lost on a trail, take a Bible with you and read Psalms 104. You know, David's a man after God's own heart. I know one thing he did. He looked at the birds. God takes care of his creation. What does the future hold? What does the future hold? I'm confident there are widows here this morning. At one time we had 42 widows in the church at Palm Beach Lakes. I don't know how many you've got. There are widows here. I want to say something to you widows. God's going to take care of you. I know it because of a widow who gave 2 half farthings, 2 mites. 2 mites make a farthing. And Jesus saw that widow cast in her farthings, and that may be all that you have to give to God, and thank God for the widow's farthings. And she starved to death the next day. You know that's not right. Why? Because you know God. And there was that time whenever he's not here anymore, and you thought, I cannot handle this. I cannot make it. It's... But you have. And I know why. Because you're more. You're worth more than a bird. When my dad died, my mom lived 100 miles away from where I was living. I thought, my oh my, how can I be what my mom needs? My sister lived there, and that helped a lot. But I'm still a son. I've still got a mother. I've still got a mother who's a widow. And I sat down, and I read every verse in the Bible on widows. Widows, sit down and read those verses. God hardly ever mentions them without saying, I'm going to take care of you. Pure and undefiled religion is what? Baptism by immersion? Lord's Supper every Sunday? I'm not saying those things are not important. You'll hear some more about that in this gospel meeting. What's pure religion? Undefiled religion. And this is not talking to the widows. This is talking to every one of us in a church that maybe doesn't have 42 widows, but it has widows in this church. To visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. That's how special widows are. Remember that widow whose only son had died, carrying him to be buried? She's a widow. And God raised her son. That's a God-fearing woman in the days of Elijah or Elisha, whenever, whichever one it is that goes up into Syria, where the Syrophoenician woman is. She's a God-fearing woman. And God looks up there to a Gentile widow, and God takes care of her and sends the prophet up there to provide food for her. Enough food that it takes 2 sticks to cook the last oil and meal in that container that she has. And God took care of her. You know this verse, but it's in Matthew 6. Seek ye first. You know the verse. You can quote it. The last part we don't pay any attention to. But the last part has to do with food and clothing and the providence of God. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. I'm going to take care of you. Now then, I want to talk to you, those of you who are members of the church, and from the depths of my heart, I wish I could say the rest of this sermon applies to you if you're not a member of the church. But it's not. And I want above every other thing for you to become a Christian if you're not a Christian today. So you can understand and appreciate what I'm about to talk about. And that is the special providence that God has for those of you who are his children. And if you're not a child of God, you need to become one. If you think it's good and marvelous that it does what it does for the birds and what it does for those widows and everything, Can I talk about special providence? Can I talk about special providence in the story of a teenage boy? Any teenagers listening here right now? Soon to be teenagers? Used to be teenagers? I remember better when I was a teenager, what I did when I was a teenager, and I remember what I did yesterday. Does that cover every one of us? Teenage boy. There's no reason him to be faithful to God. His own brothers kicked him out of the house. Wanted to kill him. And if I'm Joseph, I'm thinking, as soon as my dad finds out where I am, my dad will be down here tomorrow. He's got some, I remember they got 20 pieces of silver from me. My dad's got 10,000 times 20. My dad will be down here tomorrow and buy me back. My dad doesn't show up. There's no reason for him to be faithful. The amazing thing is he'd never seen a Bible. He'd never seen the Ten Commandments. Everything he knew because his father or somebody in that family said, let me tell you about the God of heaven. And when Potiphar's wife says, lie with me, I cannot sin against God. Where does he get that sense of morality and purity? And if you've got small children, that's where your kids are going to get it. The very same place Joseph got it. I can't sin. But there's an expression in those last 13 chapters of Genesis. And by the way, there are as many chapters in Genesis devoted to Joseph as there are devoted to Abraham. And Joseph is not even in the direct lineage of Jesus. Jesus did not come through the tribe of Joseph, Ephraim, Manasseh. He came through the tribe of Judah. The Lord could have said, and it came to pass that there was a famine in the land, and the children of Israel went down and lived in the land of Egypt 430 years, and the Lord brought them out. And that's about what he does when they come back from Babylon in captivity. 3 or 4 verses. And he could have done that whole thing about Genesis. And you and I would have appreciated how God brought them out. Just like we appreciated how he brought them out. But there's an expression found in those closing chapters. But God was with him. But God was with him. But God was with him. And it seemed like every time he did right, it went wrong. Is that the way in your life? Every decision you ever made has gone wrong. Didn't work out. Didn't work out for Joseph either. God sent me before you. You meant it for evil. God meant it for good. Here's your verse. The eyes of the Lord or over the righteous. Kevin, I know you by name. The eyes of the Lord are over Kevin. And that's my name, Paul, this morning. The eyes of the Lord are over Paul. You put your name in that verse. The eyes of the Lord are over Dan, and his ears are open to Dan's prayers. You want to meditate on that? You want to think about that? I'm sorry. I got a kindergarten brain. I'm not smart enough to have a big one. I know heaven is not like this at all. But it really helps me to get a hold of it. Imagine what heaven's like. all of these tornadoes and hurricanes and all of these wars and all of this that's going on in the world and everything. There's one report after another coming from every person all over this earth, and heaven is just a place that's just constant influx of all sorts of things. And then all of a sudden the God of heaven says, stop! My son Dan, he's in Florida and he's calling on me. That's all that matters. Stop! God needs me. And oh, do I need God. You young mothers know what I'm talking about. Is that 5 minutes? Can we get rid of that clock, put a calendar back there? I'd do a lot better, okay? The mothers are out. They're having to get together and, you know, they got their little kids. They're either out in the yard or in the other room, and all of a sudden a little baby starts crying. Some child starts crying. You know what happens? One mother jumps up. That's my child. I recognize the calling and the weeping of my child. The eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and God recognizes your cry. His eyes are over them. I'd been up to somewhere, was it North Carolina, driving back to Florida one night, spring break. You know what that's like. It's where everybody in the Northeast comes to Florida to fornicate, best I can figure out. You understand that? But I mean, we I don't have any motels. We stopped at trying to find, couldn't find a place. I told you we were just going to have to drive all night. Drive top in those hills, I look backwards. As far as I look in the rearview mirror, there are cars. I look down in front of mine and see nothing but tail lights, you know, for the next 700 miles. How many cars on the road? The eyes of the Lord are on one of those cars. Not because Dan and Judy are good, but because God is good and I'm God's child. And you're on the road right now in your life. And there are things that are happening in your life that you need to be aware of. And the eyes of the Lord are on both the righteous. And His ears open to your prayers. How do you talk about providence? Let me close with one story. You remember when you're in preschool, first grade? And the teacher says, tomorrow we're going to paint a beautiful picture. I've got these palettes, and she holds them up, all of these colors on this palette. You guys, here's a little brush. And tonight I want you to go home, and I want you to think about the picture you're going to paint. Oh, by the way, get your big brothers, big sisters, get a shirt. We don't want to get to paint on you. You go home that night and you lay awake and you just, in your imagination, you've got the greatest picture. You know what Mama's going to do? Tomorrow afternoon when I walk home with that picture, she's going to take everything off the fridge and there's only going to be one thing left, and that's the thing, I'm a painting I'm going to make tomorrow. Next day, that little bratty kid takes that paintbrush, my sweet little daughter, and splatters paint all over and messes up the canvas. And the child's heartbroken. It's not what I planned. It's not what I wanted. Not what I chose for my picture to be like. I had something different in mind. And that amazing teacher comes over there and takes the brush out of that child's hand and says, can I have that brush? And that glob of black and brown becomes mountains in the distance. And that big glob of blue becomes a beautiful lake and becomes the sky. And that massive thing of white is painted some way on top of all of that sky and all of that. And that technicolor mess of paint becomes a beautiful flower garden. And the end picture is better than that child's ever dreamed of. When you were a young person, you had dreams. This is what I'm going to do in my life. And life has taken the brush out of your hand and they splattered that stuff and you got your life in the biggest mess imaginable. Guys, give God the brush. Thank you so much for listening.